the He-Men Book Lovers Club, and we take it seriously.
It's time to man up. DJ Conley is a member of the He-Men Book Club of Minneapolis, taking us to Africa by way of the Twin Cities. They're the latest clubbers in our Takeaway Book Club series. The He-Men are reading All Our Names by novelist Dino Mengistu. With so much Africa in the news, the He-Men were interested in an adventure story. This one's all about an Ethiopian man displaced by time and place, uneasily at home in America. Here's TJ reading a bit of All Our Names.
On the bus ride to the Capitol, I gave up all the names my parents had given me. I was almost 25, but by any measure, much younger. I shed those names just as our bus crossed the border into Uganda. We were closing in on Lake Victoria. I knew Kampala was close, but even then I had already committed myself to thinking of it only as the capital. Kampala was too small for what I imagined. That city belonged to Uganda, but the capital, as long as it was nameless, had no such allegiances. Like me, it belonged to no one, and anyone could claim it.
The main character, called Bird because he dreams of flying, is on a journey from war-torn Uganda to Midwestern America. This is a story of identity, love, and the search for home. For 10 years, the He-Men Club has been taking its chances on new authors and challenging books, and Glenn Miller says this book is a winner.
I was riveted. I measure a book's success as to whether I want to return to it at the end of each day, which I certainly did, but then also, does it take me to a place that I've never been before, or does it put me into a body that I've never been in? Do I understand these characters? Am I empathetic with these characters? And I absolutely was.
That's TJ Connolly, who founded the He-Men Book Club, talking about Dino Mengistu's All Our Names. He's as Midwestern as they come, and he concurred with Glenn.
I really enjoyed and admire this book. I think it does a terrific job of exploring themes like identity and family history and reinventing ourselves. And I think as a Midwesterner, born and bred, you always worry about how Midwesterners are portrayed. And I thought he did a great job. It was a very fair portrayal of kind of life in a small town in Iowa. And I did not feel that it was condescending or anything of that sort.
But Finn Dineski, our third club member, had a few reservations.
I would give a horizontal thumb. I think this book demonstrates that the emotional costs of dislocation and immigration last for generations. And in this book, we find a young man who is blithely unconcerned with politics, tribe, family, and seeks to prove that you don't have to be consumed with your past.
To recap now, All Our Names is the title of our latest book club book, reviewed and discussed by the He-Man Book Lovers Club from Minnesota. Novelist Dino Mengistu lets loose his main character, nicknamed Bird by his father, to fly from Ethiopia to revolutionary Uganda to America, where he falls in love with a white American woman named Helen. Our He-Men, Glenn Miller, Finn Dineski, and TJ Connolly were thrilled to take this journey, which taught them a lot about each other, as we learned overhearing their thoughtful discussion. Here's T.J. Conley.
The narrator, the African narrator, tells us near the beginning of the book that when he was born, he had 13 names, one for each generation of his family from this particular African village. And then, ironically, he ends up with more names during the course of the book than anybody else. He has all sorts of nicknames. And so it really is a story about identity and naming yourself and picking your own name versus being given a name by your family. And in that piece, it's just fascinating.
Beyond that, it is about claiming your place within the world. And we are so tied in with our names that I think almost each time a new name is given, it reflects on where the narrator certainly is at that point within the story.
And he seems to be filled with a lot of anxiety about trying to find something, feeling that he's lost something, wondering if he can ever find it. Did you sense that?
I have a different take on this, and that is that He's somewhat numb, and he's striving for a Zen-like detachment from his family, and I think he achieves that. And his father, when he was a boy, called him Bird because he liked living in the sky, flying above it all. And I think that's his chief characteristic. He doesn't want to be consumed by politics. He wants to float free, detached from family. Maybe, you know, his being given 13 names drove him out of Ethiopia because the weight of family and tribe is too much for him. He just He has a loving family. They have productive land. They've been there for hundreds of years, and he just up and leaves. He wants to be a writer. And I think it's a remarkable achievement that somebody who self-orphans himself, sort of a, he has decided to be one of the lost boys, and goes to Uganda and actually survives. I think it's a it's quite a miracle of survival. But I do think that the author here is trying to test out a way of ordering your life, a way of being that is not consumed with the harrowing events of Uganda and Ethiopia. Try to find a way that to live where you're not defined by and consumed by tribe, religion, politics, and political events. And he achieves that, but I don't think that the narrative quite supports his reasons for leaving his home in the first place. I find that a bit implausible.
Did the author hold you? Were you sympathetic?
You know, I enjoyed the novel, and I keep coming back to it. I still don't feel that I'm at rest on an interpretation, and that's a good sign. You know, some books I read, and it doesn't intrigue me, and I can set it aside. This one, I'm still in flux, but I do find Bird very intriguing because I don't understand him, and I'm not very sympathetic to him, and I'm kind of indifferent to his indifference, because I don't understand what makes him tick. He is living in one of the most traumatic historical political periods or eras in Uganda in this entire century. I mean, you can't think of too many places that it would be more harrowing to live there. And he is just floating free of that, and I don't know why he chose that to order his life that way. And so, but you know, he's of course free to do that. And some immigrants do that. They come here and want to forget everything. Some don't. Some come here and are very keen on passing their history on to their children. And as an immigration attorney, I've done, in early part of my career, I did a lot of asylum cases.
What's your background, Finn? What's your background?
This is the dirty secret.
Well, I've done some asylum cases, people from Liberia, Burma, and various countries, and they're very eager to tell their stories and not forget. Here's a character who's eager to forget. Initially, I was very put off by it, but I think that I am sympathetic to Donau trying to create this character because he himself has made it clear in an interview that I read that he is not interested in being, you know, held down by history, and he floats free himself. Mm. That was the mode of his family of dealing with this. And also, I like the fact that Bird, in the chapters that deal with the Joseph's military adventures in northern Uganda, in those scenes, which I think are the strongest scenes in the novel, we see that even though Bird is the guy in the sky, he's living in his own little world, that it's actually Joseph and Isaac who are deluded, because Joseph goes up there thinking he can liberate these villages, and he's completely wrong. It's a complete disaster. And Bird goes up there, he's free to wander around, and he describes in a naive way how that military adventure is a complete disaster. And so we get, in a sense, a justification for Bird's alienation and detachment. And if you want to criticize Bird, well, you look at Joseph's military adventure and you think, well, here's a man who's astute, well-educated, well-connected, has a lot of money, thinks he's going to be president, and yet in some ways is even more deluded, less clear-sighted than Bird himself. So this is what's growing on me, the realization that there is benefit and knowledge to come from this detachment. And and Bird, I think, does evolve.
But do you think that, getting back to Bird, his name, and this lack of grounding, is that what Mengistu is trying to say that is experienced by some of these immigrants?
Well, in this novel, Bird is the only one who assumes that stance. It's clear at the beginning when he goes to the camp, he says all the other boys have political opinions and they're revolutionaries, socialists, and whatever. And Isaac says that's all we have here. And Isaac, toward the end, when he says, I can't use this passport to go to America because if I leave Uganda, I am nothing. That's my entire identity. So here's a novel in which Bird is the only character portrayed who is seeking to create an identity that is not grounded in Uganda or Ethiopia, mm-hmm. where he's from. And I think the author is sort of testing out a way of being, a way of constructing an identity. Can you do this? And yes, I think it's entirely possible. Wow. In real life, I've seen people do that. But in this novel, I find that here's a happy young boy with a family that's functional, a caring father, and he just up and decides to leave. That's hard. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that.
Well, let's do a true confessions here then a little bit. How unbounded are you from your family background? How long have you been in the United States? Is it recent or is it more like Sinclair Lewis, you know, Main Street? you've been in the small town sort of Midwest forever and ever and ever.
Well, I grew up in Michigan. My parents are retired in Ontario. I see them every summer. But, you know, that's a very good question you ask, because in America, it's an extremely individualistic society. So I think that for us to uproot and go is more the norm than in Africa. And again, maybe I'm just playing on stereotypes, but he came from a village, 13 generations. I can't, there's nothing about my background that can even remotely relate to that. My parents moved away from, you know, their hometowns and families, and that's what we did. My siblings are all over the United States and one in Canada. So I have that sense of being uprooted and transient, but it's part of our culture more than I believe it is his. And here's an author who came to the United States at 2 years old, and I think what he's doing to some degree is projecting his own experience onto this character, because Danao never lived in Ethiopia except for 2 years, came to the United States in 1980 and lived in Peoria. And I think that the author himself is struggling to find a way to create a coherent sense of self that does not depend on place.
I take a different view of the narrator than Finn does. I find Finn's view of him to be a little harsher. I see him as this ultimate, you know, sort of innocent, naive, sort of passive fellow. I mean, he moves from Ethiopia to Uganda because there had been a writers' conference in Uganda 10 years before that sort of captured his imagination. So he picks up and he leaves this very stable, you know, well-rooted family to go to Uganda. I mean, that's just innocent and naive, you know, and it's almost comical if you think about it. And then I don't think he has any broad or great desires to come to the United States. He sort of falls into it. He fell in with Isaac in the capital and was sort of somewhat politicized by Isaac, although he never takes on Isaac's politics. He drifts. He's a drifter from one situation to another. He's very passive, and he falls into these situations, and then he finds himself in a small town in Iowa and has to recreate himself there once again. So I see him, you know, not as an agent of his own destiny. He's really, you know, he's the reactive type, not the active type.
I would agree with that. I think the strongest action he ever takes in the entire book actually is when he comes to the capital for education. And the rest of the time, it's a pinball is too strong of a word, but he really is kind of following the dictates of those around him. He's very impressionable. But I think we're dancing around a really key theme within this book, and that is around independence. And I think both storylines are looking at that issue in different ways. In the Uganda chapters, the author is looking at independence as a nation or as a group of warriors. And in the American chapters, they're looking at individual independence here in America.
All right, He-Man. Certainly. Does the love story work here?
Well,
good question.
And yes. In terms of love stories, John, I would say there are also a couple love story lines going on, certainly between Isaac and Helen. There's the one that and both of whom are seeking an independence of their own. But there also is some sort of love story going on in the and if, love story, I say in quotes, between we'll stick with Bird, the narrator, and his pal Isaac. There is some sort of tension there in their relationship that goes beyond typical He-Man going with the name of our club. But then also between Isaac, the warrior, and Joseph, there clearly is some sort of unspoken relationship there as well that the author keeps intimating. Mm. Isaac will go away at night. We're not quite sure where he's going. The narrator questions Isaac, how did you get elevated so quickly within Joseph's army? And that question causes a quite violent reaction from Isaac, and he severely beats the narrator for what he seemingly is implying in terms of what's going on with that relationship.
We're talking with Glenn Miller, T.J. Conley, and Finn Doneski, who are members of the He-Man Book Club, the He-Man Book Lovers Club. We're talking about the book All Our Names by Denham and Gestu. You know, here's the public radio question for the three of you before we go. How does this exploration, this book, the series of books that you've chosen on this subject, how does it affect your view of, say, what's going on in Nigeria, Boko Haram, the headlines that we've been seeing all year?
Well, this is TJ. I think reading books like this gives you such a multidimensional view of Africa. And so, you know, whereas before you might have seen Boko Haram and written it off as, you know, all those people in Africa are fighting again and killing themselves, you realize it's a much more nuanced story, a much more subtle story. And so I think it just adds layers of appreciation to that. You can't help but think of, you know, the middle-class people in Nigeria that you know about, or, you know, people in Ethiopia or what have you. So it's but I think, and John, going back to your question, I think the other thing that it really informs, and the one issue we haven't talked about, is race relations in this country. And you asked before about the relationship between Helen and Isaac and whether that works. And here they are in this small town in Iowa in the early to mid-70s. And the, you know, that scene in the diner when Helen takes him to lunch at the diner is the most memorable scene in the book to me. It really drives home, you know, here's a guy who had to fled Uganda, you know, with a price on his head. I mean, he was in great danger there. He comes to America, you know, the land of milk and honey, and suddenly he's dealing with this whole other issue, this racism issue that he really never had to deal with in Uganda, but which is just as potent and just as troubling. And Helen, in a couple of places, says, you know, he seemed to understand these issues more than I did. You know, he understood what was going on in the diner well before she did. And so it's interesting to watch him get transposed from Africa, where he's dealing with all these bodily threats, to Iowa, where the threats are much more subtle, but just as real. And so I, from my point of view, the sort of the racism piece, or the biracial love relationship in the 70s, is even more interesting than what was going on in Uganda in the 70s.
How does your point of view, you know, as I gather middle-aged guys in the Midwest, white guys in the Midwest, to this relationship?
I'll jump in. This is Glenn. I actually struggled a little bit with some of the scenes that he was portraying, and this is my own naivete, I think, is that I didn't actually feel people in the diner, even in the 70s, I didn't feel people in the diner would be reacting quite that way. Now, that may be me living in Minneapolis for much of my life, liberal bastion. I almost wondered if Mengistu was stretching a little bit with some of those scenes. TJ is shaking his head.
I would have to agree with that to some degree. And I think that the small town scenes, maybe that's plausible. I think this is set in, what, 76, 77, 78?
Somewhere in the 70s.
Somewhere in the South, maybe in Missouri. I didn't catch the Iowa thing. I thought it was further south.
I actually thought it was Illinois.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, it's not specific. But I think for me, the moment when I thought this is not really plausible reading of the race relations is when they take the trip to Chicago and
people are looking at them?
You know, at the time that they were in Chicago, I was 23, 24. I'd been to Chicago many times, downtown, on that very street, probably on that very corner. And I know, as a matter of fact, that, you know, interracial couple would not. You would not stare at them, other people.
Oh, I don't agree.
It would not catch people's attention.
No, it wouldn't. Not at that time. Maybe in the late 60s, because I was in Chicago in the late 60s. But I know that is for me, that was implausible. But I think the larger point, and I wouldn't want to quibble about that. We each have our own experience. But I think that the reaction to that relationship between Ellen and Bird or Isaac is, there were scenes when I thought, okay, is Bird going to wake up and realize this is a dream? Because for me, Helen struck me as his fantasy woman who takes care of all his needs. He's his tour guide. They have this sexual relationship that lasts for a year. She doesn't even know his name. And they live in this little bubble, partly because of, in my view, the exaggerated racial reactions of others to them. They stay inside. But they also live in a bubble because of this somewhat flimsy pretext that Henry says, okay, you're going to have to lay low here in the Midwest. And he says, okay, I will live, and I'm quoting now, I will live as if I'm not really here. So he can continue to live in America pretty much as he did in Uganda, as if he's not really there. He's the Birdman, Zen-like detachment. And so I found that the scene with Helen, yeah, there is genuine emotion there. I think they do love each other. But it's a relationship that allows Birdman to exist above it all, separate from engaging, really, with American society. Just as he, you know, the same way of being that he constructed for himself in Uganda and Ethiopia.
Finn, TJ, and Glenn, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.